All around us are signs that the obituaries of our cities were premature. There are signs of life, even robust life. Young people want to be able to live in an urban community. They want to be able to walk to the coffee shop, to the pub, and even to work. Elected officials are willing to invest public subsidies to ensure our cities thrive, and there's hardly a day that goes by that the newspapers don't have stories about more good news for our cities. For those of you who like your cul-de-sac, your homogeneous neighborhoods and schools, and spending lots of time in your cars, I don't think the rebirth of our cities is a threat, and I don't think it means the death of our suburbs. But it's hard to imagine that anyone would consider the reincarnation of our cities anything but good news. Tonight, I have the gifted women who are driving the revitalization of our cities. They are the directors of community and economic development in Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton. I'm Alan Jennings. I'm your host. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. And during the day in my real life, I have the privilege of running a little nonprofit called the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. Once a month, sometimes more, WDIY is crazy enough to give me the opportunity to have this microphone to bring to the smartest radio listeners in Lehigh Valley the public affairs issues that at least I personally think matter most. So tonight I have Gretchen Langenbach, who is the director of the Easton Department of Community and Economic Development. Gretchen, welcome.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having us.
I have Alicia Carner, who until about 3 months ago ran economic development for Northampton County, but is now the director of community and economic development for the city of Bethlehem, and in the interest of disclosure, a former president of my board. Doesn't mean I'll be any nicer to you, Alicia. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me.
And finally, Sarah Hailstone, who is the director of community and economic development for the city of Allentown. And Sarah, welcome.
Thank you, Alan. Always a pleasure to be with you.
So our cities are like hot. Why is that now? What exactly is going on that makes our cities working and or at least looking like we're on the right track? You know, after years, I think, of banging our heads against the wall and wishing that we could try to make this work, what's going on that's making our cities work all of a sudden, or not all of a sudden, but so well these days?
Well, I certainly hope that in some part it is a change in the collective mindset on the way we want to live. I mean, I think people don't necessarily want to live in places where they have to drive everywhere, that there's no neighborhood feel necessarily for their kids, and that they see the advantage of living in a city with a vibrant downtown where they can walk for a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk if they need it.
Gretchen, you're NYU educated and hanging around the coolest city, or certainly the most crazy city in America. Do you have a perspective on this? Like, what's up?
I think what's happening here is what's similar to happening in the larger cities around New York, Philadelphia. You see young people coming out of college wanting to live in a downtown and an urban area, and you're also seeing empty nesters moving back from Long Island, from Connecticut, into the city to have access to culture and a community that's easier, frankly. I think we're seeing that on a smaller scale here in the Lehigh Valley. And Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton give people, both young and old, the opportunity to have that on a smaller scale, but to still experience that same type of urban lifestyle.
Sarah, before you came to Allentown, you were doing similar work in Scranton. I don't know how Scranton is doing these days. Is this Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton, or is this cities in general from your experience?
I would actually agree with Alicia and Gretchen. I think it's actually more of a national phenomenon that people are moving back to the urban communities because of what urban communities can offer them.
The marketplace. You know, when it comes right down to it, the market ultimately has to work. How functional is the marketplace these days? Does it have a life of its own, or, you know, are we still kind of doing everything we can to kind of constantly breathe life into it?
I think it depends if you're talking about from a developer's perspective or someone who's a tenant, a residential tenant, who would have interest in living in a downtown. Frankly, I think that's one of the hottest markets in the valley, in our cities. It's more affordable to live. It's easier to live. There's less house repairs. There's less lawn to mow. There's less snow to shovel when you're living in an upper floor of a downtown, an urban style building. So it's very economically feasible for someone to do that. Somebody else can touch on it from a developer's perspective, but at least from an end user standpoint, there's a great market.
And I agree with Gretchen. I think what we're also seeing is the incentives are catching up with the market. And so we're not just out there giving cash or tax abatement in its entirety. We're allowing the market to drive the development and taking the revenue associated with the market and putting it back into the project. So what you see in Allentown and what you're seeing in Bethlehem is the market driving the CRIS or the NIS, and it's the taxes that are generated from that going back into the development of the project. If there was no market to drive that, we wouldn't be able to offer those incentives in Bethlehem.
So do you become, do you find yourselves reacting to the market? Do you see yourselves still having to drive the market? Do you see yourselves as you know, pedaling as fast as you can? I mean, you get out of the way and let the market work on its own. I mean, how
little
do you
bit
see
of both.
Your role?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. There's a sweet spot in what you're able to capture as a result of what the market is driving. But there's also areas that you want to see development occur in which you need to be a little more aggressive as a municipality and offering some kind of assistance to see the development progress.
And there are limitations as far as what an urban apartment in the Lehigh Valley can demand as far as cost. So if you back that out into how much someone can afford to spend on a building, our building stock puts us at a disadvantage. Our space limitations put us at a disadvantage. So a city may want to see a beautiful old building reconstructed and turned into these apartments. But the reality is, if you work backwards from the numbers of, you know, what at maximum the market can demand, it's going to require subsidy to make that happen.
My daughter, and we probably all know people in this situation, my daughter works in Lower Manhattan, lives in Brooklyn. And, you know, Brooklyn is like the most happening place, certainly on the East Coast these days. And she pays like $14 trillion a month for, an apartment the size of my living room at maybe. We're nowhere near that point here in the Lehigh Valley. I mean, is there any housing that's really hot, really, in any of our three cities?
I think it's good that we're nowhere near that, and that's what's attracting people to this area from those communities. I can't speak for Allentown and Bethlehem, but if not experiencing it now, I'm sure they will. But that's probably the area from which we see the most new residents in Easton, and that's their very complaint, and they can find something similar in the Lehigh Valley for much less per month.
Sarah, you've got a tiger by the tail in Allentown. You've got the most incredible public policy tool, I think, that's been developed for city revitalization, certainly in Pennsylvania, maybe well beyond. J.B. Riley City Center Investments is developing market rate housing development at 7th and Linden Streets. I know you believe in that market. I wouldn't expect you to say otherwise. Do you think that he's going to satisfy the demand with that project, or do you see us getting, when I say us, I'm, as some listeners would know, I'm on the board of directors of the financing authority for the NIS. Do we expect more housing development kinds of projects coming our way, or is that just too cool?
No, I would expect that we will need more housing development in and around the NIS in the downtown area, because as we add the amenities that people are looking to live by, more people will want to live in our downtown. So as they are closer to the jobs, as they are closer to the nightlife, as they are closer to cultural activities, they will begin to see the amazing assets that we have, and they'll be willing to give up their easy access to the highway and their quick access to the grocery store in order to be by all of those other assets.
One of the things that we talk about a lot in the Valley is the retention of talent out of college-age people moving out of the area. And it's because we don't have these things to offer that Sarah's talking about. And I think it's what they're looking for, and so they go elsewhere to find it. Thinking regionally, you know, any of these attractions that come to Allentown or any of our urban cores, I think will help the region retain their talent, keep people here, and as a result, there'll be a need for additional housing of that type to satisfy, we hope, that demographic population.
In 2003, the Brookings Institution did a study on Pennsylvania called Back to Prosperity, and it noted that Pennsylvania was losing more 25 to 34-year-olds than any state in the country. That's 10 years ago now, 11 years ago. Do we have any good evidence, or is it mostly anecdotal, that trend is being reversed? I mean, you know, I'm not sure. I'm seeing a lot of younger people actually moving in yet. I think they're hanging out in the bars more, but I don't think they're...
We do, actually, Alan, and I can't speak for Allentown Bethlehem, but I bet the numbers are similar. Recent data that was pulled, I believe, by Lehigh Valley Planning Commission showed Easton with the highest increase in that age group of population, highest percentage of any municipality in the Lehigh Valley. So I would not be surprised if the other cities were not far behind, and that's 25 to 34-year-old, I believe. So there actually is hard evidence that that's beginning to change.
I think, first of all, I keep forgetting to do this because I am, after all, a complete amateur. I'm Alan Jennings. I'm the host of Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is WDIY, listener-supported community public radio, and the voices you're listening to are the voices of Sarah Hailstone, the Director of Community and Economic Development in Allentown, Alicia Miller-Karner, the Director of Community and Economic Development in Bethlehem, and Gretchen Longenbach, who has the same title in the city of Easton. The NIS versus the CRIS. I got to tell you, to be real honest with you, I have yet to quite understand the difference. I mean, I get that the NIS is a very powerful tool, that the CRIS is more limited, especially insofar as the subsidies that come back only apply to your essentially poaching business from outside of Pennsylvania. What other differences are there about between the NIS and the community revitalization investment?
Improvement
zone.
Yes. I'm sorry, I'm confusing the authority with the designation, investment. Basically, and I don't want to speak for Sarah, but you're spot on when it comes to the limitations of the CRIS. It is incremental taxes. It's not collecting base taxes of businesses that are already in a designated parcel. So we, as the city, didn't designate any parcels that had substantial economic activity in them because there wasn't the ability to collect the taxes. That's what our baseline is. And so we tried to make our baseline as close to zero as possible, because the only thing we're going to get from companies that come here are the new taxes to Pennsylvania. So if there's an existing business and they want to locate and they're generating additional revenue through taxes, that's okay. If they're moving from York to Bethlehem, that's not okay, because there's not net new or not substantial net new taxes for the CRIS authority to collect.
And so by incremental, you mean new revenue generated from it. So in Allentown, any revenue that's generated gets captured and is available to use for incentives, the subsidy for the new developer, correct?
Well, if the developer is coming into a site that isn't already producing taxes, that is correct. But if the developer is coming into a site that is already producing taxes, that baseline they cannot touch.
So, I mean, I don't want to pick a fight or start a brawl or anything in the studio here, but I'm guessing that just about every city in Pennsylvania has got to be jealous of the trick that Senator Brown pulled in developing the neighborhood improvement zone for Allentown. Do you see yourselves, Alicia Karner and Gretchen Longenbach, as being at a significant disadvantage because of the presence of the NIS in Allentown versus the CRIS in Bethlehem, or neither one in Easton?
I mean, what I see is a different incentive for each community. I mean, some communities are in a position of wanting to use KOZ because that's what's going to, they believe, attract business to their city.
And the KOZ is the Keystone Opportunity Zone.
Yeah, a tax abatement.
Which is a tax abatement. No taxes, certain taxes during the entire, 10-year period.
What we saw in Bethlehem was a lot of projects that had been proposed but hadn't progressed through a number of years. And so I don't know that a tool as powerful as the NIS, while of course nobody would turn away from an opportunity like that, I'm not sure that when the Commonwealth looks at what incentives to offer to what communities, that a one-size-fits-all approach is always appropriate. And if you look across Pennsylvania, you're going to see some communities certainly need an opportunity like the NIS much more so than others. Bethlehem is very excited about the CRIS designation, and we have already seen movement on the parcels we've designated towards development. And so while you would never want to try to crystal ball, you know, what's going to happen next year or 5 years from now, we can say confidently that the CRIS opportunity will be well used or well utilized in the city of Bethlehem.
I think the big advantage Easton has is that you're so close to all the people over the on the other side of the river with money that are trying to get out because of the tax differential and all those kinds of things. Is that flow continuing, Gretchen? Is that continuing to benefit the city of Easton?
It is to some extent, but as a general rule, our projects are smaller than those in some of the other cities. We're limited with the amount of land and the large size or small size buildings that we do have in the city. Unlike Allentown and Bethlehem, Easton doesn't really have any peripheral lands that are part of the city proper. So to answer your question about the NIS, we think the NIS is great. Mayor Panto has been outspoken about his support for Allentown and for the NIS, and we're trying to take a regional approach to that. We feel it might be that someone works in Allentown and lives in Easton, and that's perfectly fine, or vice versa. And the communities each have their own identity. They may look the same to everyone, but I think they each have different things that attract different people, and people are going to be drawn to one or the other for whatever reason. So we try not to look at it as a competitive thing, but more kind of cooperative and how can we work together. But certainly proximity to New Jersey, even more so proximity to New York, Jersey City, we're seeing a lot from Hoboken, Brooklyn, those kind of transplants into Easton, and it's certainly helpful to be so close to a state that's been considered unfriendly as far as taxes go in the past.
You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Tonight, my guests are the three individuals who are driving the community and economic development efforts that are posting big benefits for the cities of Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton. Allentown's Sarah Hailstone, Bethlehem's Alicia Miller-Karner, and Easton's Gretchen Langenbach. Stay with us. Plenty to talk about.
Well, I've been down so very damn long that it looks like up to me. Yeah, why don't one you people come on and set me free?
WDIY is proud to sponsor the Chamber Music Society of Bethlehem, presenting the Daedalus Quartet, Friday, April 11th at 7:30 p.m. at Foy Concert Hall, Moravian College. Concert highlights include works by Purcell, Britten, and Beethoven. For more information, 610-435-7611 or cmsob.org.
Bad times, I have my share of hard times too. Well, I lost my faith in the world, honey, when I lost you. Remember the good times. chat together. Don't you want them back again?
All right, the guy that's making all this stuff work is Neil Heaver. Neil is the guy that runs the programming here at WDIY. He goes back to the very beginning. And DIY is from the initials of do it yourself. And the problem is I don't know how to do it myself. And so poor Neil has to come in and work extra hours. So I'm grateful to Neil for the extra time he puts in to push those buttons and move those lights and gadgets and everything else so that we don't screw this up too bad. I'm Alan Jennings, your host of Lehigh Valley Discourse. Thanks for staying with us. Tonight, my guests are Sari Hailstone, Director of Community and Economic Development in Allentown, her counterpart, Alicia Miller-Karner from Bethlehem, and their counterpart, Gretchen Langenbach from the City of Easton. All remarkably talented people running the show in our three cities. And the show in our three cities is pretty impressive these days. But we've all got, you know, big projects that are major things that we're trying to get done. And I'm just wondering, Gretchen, if we could maybe start with you, the kind of stalled projects that, you know, are important that you put a lot of energy into, and we're still waiting for the projects to really get moved and completed. What have you got?
Well, honestly, Alan, the projects that are most notable that people have considered stalled forever, up to 30 years in some cases, are actually the majority of them now underway. They're nowhere near completion, but we finally seem to be getting some traction with the recovery of the economy a little bit, and the identification of some developers who seem to be quality developers and have done good work and continue to do so in Easton. So some of our larger projects, like the Silk Mill, is now finally under construction with the weather break. The Governor Wolf Building will be very shortly. The Easton, now new City Hall and Intermodal Transportation Center, is also under construction. So those were projects that for many years have been the quote-unquote stalled projects, Silk Mill and the Intermodal Facility specifically. We have a few other sites now that we're just starting to turn our attention to that perhaps could be stalled projects but haven't really had the opportunity because we're just now identifying them.
So
as
they're
we
not
kind
even
of
like the ignition hasn't even been turned yet.
Sure. So we're just, it's a pretty big shift now from some of these projects that are now under control and shifting over from city control and direction into the private sector hands. We're now identifying what the next grouping of those will be. We, again, don't have, you know, huge tracts in Easton like we see in Allentown and in Bethlehem as well, but we do have a few that we're turning our attention to now and no doubt will be difficult, so we'll have to see how it goes.
Alicia, you're new to the city part of the effort. Stalled projects.
Well, certainly Martin Tower comes to mind. I mean, anything associated with Bethlehem Steel, you could argue is somewhat stalled. As much development as we've seen in the South Side projects, obviously there is large tracts of land that have yet to be developed. But Martin Tower, of course, rises to the top of the list with the CRZ designation, and the 50-plus acres in that portion of Bethlehem are designated as CRZ parcels. We expect to see a renewed interest and investment in that site. I certainly look forward to developing not just the tower, but the land surrounding the tower is an important development component.
And that is expected to be a housing.
It's been talked as being housing at one time. I think that with the CRZ opportunity, that's changed everyone's look at that site. There is a much more opportunity for collection of taxes through projects that are not residential.
And who's got control of that building now? It's back in the hands of the city? I mean,
No, it's in private. It's in the hands of private development.
Okay.
It's not city owned. I mean, the city of Bethlehem owns, or its redevelopment authority and its economic development corporation own very few properties in the city. That's a conscious decision by previous administrations. That's proven to be a wise decision, I believe. We've disposed of a lot of properties over the years, and so most of it's in private control. One of the things I learned in Northampton County was having willing developers and willing communities is critical to investment. And so we're very We have very good partners in the city of Bethlehem who are looking to develop in conjunction with what the city and the surrounding neighborhoods and communities want to see.
Sarah, what's stalled in Allentown?
Allentown Metalworks. I wouldn't say it's completely stalled, but it is currently a challenge.
That's the property right off the old Mack plant?
Correct, over on South 10th Street. It's an urban industrial site. And, you know, going back to some of your earlier questions, why do cities need subsidies? We have challenges that the suburbs and the greenfields don't have.
Like?
Like
cleanup.
Demolition.
We could have at least done that in harmony instead of in unison.
So those are some of the major challenges. Site access. I mean, when we see developers building outside of our cities, what the first thing they do is build access to their sites. Well, our old roads aren't necessarily the appropriate roads for the access that we need to some of these sites. So those are some of the things that are slowing us down. And then reminding people about the great opportunities there are with urban manufacturing and walk-to-work opportunities. But it's taking time.
Housing is an issue that I've been involved with for, you know, the whole time I've been doing this work. It is an issue that lots of people don't want to talk about, but, you know, housing is what neighborhoods are all about. You can't have a viable downtown without reasonably healthy neighborhoods surrounding it. The housing stock in the Lehigh Valley, I think, is arguably our toughest problem, that the cities are where the housing that was built before 1930, often good bones, often lots of character, the kinds of houses they don't build anymore, but they've fallen in such disrepair. They attract lots of investor landlords that aren't paying attention. Those landlords don't take care of the property. They don't screen tenants effectively. How big do you see the housing problem being in each of your cities?
It's certainly a challenge in Allentown, and I think although our housing may be similar in our cities, the placement of our housing is very different in our cities, and I think that adds to the type of character we have in each of our communities. When you look at Allentown, we have in our center city a lot of row homes. Surrounding the Central Business District, and a lot of workforce housing on what we call half streets that was built to last 10, 15 years, not to last 50, 60 years. And those are some of the greatest challenges that we have in Allentown.
Yeah, I think an asset that Bethlehem has that, if we were talking about what we'd be jealous of, Bethlehem's Central Business District is surrounded by pretty high-end, well-preserved housing. The Moravian Cultural District, for lack of a better word, is right there. You know, you drive down Market Street, big, beautiful mansions once occupied by, you know, the managers at Bethlehem Steel. Easton's kind of a hybrid, you know. But Allentown's surrounded by basically low-income housing in large part. And Easton Central Business District is kind of mixed. Your housing problem, Gretchen, is largely the West Ward.
I'd agree with that, Alan. And the Redevelopment Authority in Easton, in partnership with an organization that you help run, or help the city run, the Westward Neighborhood Partnership, along with Lehigh Valley Community Land Trust, have all partnered to really focus on a specific target area within the West Ward. We've been doing that successfully together for about 5 years now, and it's really made quite an impact. Combination of state, city, federal funds, and the county as well, Northampton County. Our hope is to target as many resources as we can in one area and then let the community that's benefited from that pick up where we left off, and we can, you know, move on to the next target area within that same community. It's a small, relatively speaking, small area, so a lot of investment goes a long way.
So the target is the 6th to 10th blocks of Ferry Street?
The target area was originally designated as a result of HUD risk scores that were done in about 2008 based on subprime lending, foreclosure risk, and that kind of thing. And it was tied directly to a neighborhood stabilization program grant. So we developed the target area with the worst of the worst, and we've now had some really positive results in that area. So it just goes to show we have testimonials from residents saying that, you know, now they've got a very diverse and mixed block, mixed income, mixed race, and they don't tolerate bad behavior on their block because they're proud of it. And in some areas, I think we're ready to kind of move on to the next stop. But it really takes a kind of house by house, block by block approach. It's much different than looking at the larger projects in the downtown.
And the resources that you have available traditionally would be CDBG and home funding. And I know all three of your cities have been have seen a lot of that funding gutted. Do you, off the top of your head, are you able to say the amount of money you've lost, say, in the last maybe during your tenure? Well, Alicia, it's short on your part, but you've lost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Our allocation was small to begin with. I know 25, 30 years ago, the Easton Redevelopment Authority, who administers the program, got about $2 million. We're in about the $700,000 range now. Hmm. And over 20 years, the costs of everything go up.
Cost of labor, cost of money, cost of insurance.
We've lost about $1 million annually since I've arrived in Allentown.
So how do you get a grip on the housing problem? I mean, what do we do?
And for us, this part of it is bringing jobs to the community so that the people that are living in the housing can afford to fix the housing. That's a big part of it.
I agree with Sarah. I mean, that's critical. If people don't have a place to work, obviously you're going to struggle with who you're going to put in houses. We also, I mean, our biggest area of concentration is the South Side, which we're sitting in, and one of our challenges is student housing, as you're well aware of. And the mixture of low-income housing and student housing is sometimes challenging. And so we're taking the approach of looking at what our resources are, because I don't know that the city has been terribly strategic in the way we've invested in whether it's home ownership or housing rehab, and partnering with some of the nonprofit organizations that we rely on to invest in the South Side. So we're gonna take a look at the way the city has managed those programs, but then we'll be partnering with other organizations to bring attention to the value of home ownership, which CACLV is certainly a critical partner in.
You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I am with three friends and colleagues that are doing remarkable work: Alicia Carner from the city of Bethlehem, Sarah Hailstone from the city of Allentown, Gretchen Longenbach from the city of Easton. Code enforcement. I think it's probably the most significant service that a city provides. You know, staying on top of property owners to reinvest in those properties and keep them hopefully safe and reasonably decent. I'm not sure any of us, and maybe that would put you too much on the defensive, but do you believe that we're doing adequate code enforcement in our cities?
Alan, I would say code enforcement is absolutely critical from a community development perspective for the quality of housing, for the quality of life of the people in the city. But there are a lot of other things that go along with it for it to really have an impact.
And?
Such as jobs, better policing, better streetscapes, better access, better lighting.
I think you could make the argument that code enforcement is almost more important than law enforcement. I mean, we talk about police a lot as a safety and security issue, but I think, you know, when you get a bad enough property, the only people that are going to be willing to live in that property are probably people that are going to be watched and causing trouble. I think we ought to be doing more to hire code enforcement people, and it's probably anathema to a lot of people to suggest we should do it at the expense of hiring more police. Does that get me in trouble with your bosses?
No, I don't think it would, and it's always an issue of resources for us in Easton. We're doing a lot more now than I think we've ever done, but it's still not enough. It almost seems like it's never enough. And I think it's misinterpreted sometimes. For us, it's more of an issue with landlords, not necessarily the tenants. Yeah. I mean, there's such a high population of renters, especially in the West Ward, which we were talking about. So to get a better grip on landlords, we have certain ordinances that have been in place or are coming in place, vacant property registration, where the longer the property remains vacant, the fine goes up every year, or the registration fee, rental housing inspections on a regular basis. I mean, if it used to be, and it's probably the case in the cities too, that for too long it was too easy for landlords to not maintain their properties in the city. So we're trying to make it harder for them to do that and to realize that if you're going to have a property in Easton, you're going to have to maintain it. And if not, you can go on and have property elsewhere. But we'd like to do more than we can do. But the blighted properties are a major issue.
And resources, Gretchen's right, resources are an issue. And some of the things that we do that you don't necessarily see are an analysis of what is actually on our parcels. I mean, you can go to the city and you know what your tax parcels are, but are you accurately tracking how many units are on that parcel? How'd that come about? Was that something that was zoned for? Did they go through the appropriate process? And so there's a lot of energy and resources being placed into that kind of initiative in the city of Bethlehem, which, again, might not sound like it's important, but will be terribly important to us when it comes to enforcement and a desired result for that parcel.
Quickly, let's talk about the central business districts before we go to the next break. The central business districts are always, you know, certainly the focus of the of all three of our cities. What have you got going in the central business districts right now that you really want to brag about? And Sarah, this is an easy one, I think, for the NIS. You've got some $500 million worth of new development going on. Are there things that you can tell us that haven't been, you know, publicly, you know, praised yet? Yeah, you, Sarah.
There's nothing I can tell you, Alan, that hasn't been announced publicly. No, but it goes to the point, the reason that we have, I believe, the revitalization in our central business district is because the city leadership made a concerted effort to put that investment in the central business district.
That investment meaning the arena. Starting.
And the fortunate thing is that we made a tough decision that spurred the economic growth that we had hoped for. Where some people at that time were pushing us to put the arena outside of the central business district, we believed that the right thing to do would to be put it right in the downtown to spur the growth that we're seeing.
Alicia, I think the central business district in Bethlehem is looking pretty good. I don't know that you've got any major projects that are key at this point.
I mean, if you're talking bricks and mortar, the north side has really fared very well. There was a lot of energy and effort, as many people know, that was placed into the north side a number of years ago. The mayor announced today another policing initiative that would focus on putting beat cops back into the downtowns, partnering with bicycle and mounted police. And so that is something that I think we'll see a great reception from the businesses within both the north side and the south side.
Gretchen, we're running out of time before the break.
I think the fact that we have a managed downtown with the Main Street program and the presence of the chamber has made a huge difference in the downtown. So we're seeing actual clusters of specific types of businesses. Restaurants is becoming
great
a destination. Now we're seeing the kind of like secondhand reused, whether it's furniture, whether it's records, you know, that kind of niche business is starting to form a cluster in the downtown. So we're trying to grow the district out in a strategic way to maximize those competitive clusters.
We're going to take another quick break. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, WDIY, listener-supported community radio. Neil, do what you got to do over there.
Some days you're quick, but most days you're speedy. Some days you use more force than is necessary. Some days just drop in on us. Some days are better than others. Some days it all adds up, and what you got is enough. Some days are better than others. Some days are sleepy, other days sloppy. Some days you can't stand the sight of a puppy. The snow's white, but you think you're a rubber. Some days are better than others.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem's South Side, presenting Journey, Dream of the Red Pavilion, the first of two productions in Touchstone's initiative Journey from the East, investigating the history of Chinese immigration in the Lehigh Valley, April 3rd through the 13th. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
I'm sorry, but we have to acknowledge that one of the last bastions of male dominance was economic development. It wasn't more than just a handful, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, that most economic development discussions in Lehigh Valley and the decisions that resulted could be made in the men's room. Today, all three cities' economic development leaders are women. The head of the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission is Becky Bradley, a woman. The head of planning in Bethlehem, Darlene Heller, a woman. Who am I missing?
The head of business development in the city of Allentown, Bernadette,
Tobias.
The head of, actually the operations manager, the number two person in my department, is Shannon Calori.
And Tamara, used to be Weller, Dolan.
Tamara Dolan runs the parking authority.
You know, you guys have basically taken over. So, you know, I don't know if, do you consider yourself post-feminist? Do you think that's not that big of a deal? I think it is. This is not dead time, folks. This is them not wanting to answer the question.
It gets to a point where I think that in the jobs we do, I certainly don't think about what my gender is or what other my colleagues' gender. I mean, we just kind of put our heads down and go to work and do our jobs. And, you know, yeah, there was a point in time where you'd walk into a room and there weren't as many women. I presented recently at a real estate symposium. I was the only woman on the panel and out of the moderators. And I certainly don't like to see that. I don't like to be on boards, which are dominated by, you know, all a bunch of guys. But I think when it comes to day in and day out activities, I certainly am not looking at my experiences as a woman to drive, you know, large economic development projects. When it comes to community development, maybe there's a little bit of a difference. I mean, I think with the struggle that I see personally, it's not how do I manage my 9-to-5 job. It's how do I manage my post 9-to-5 and pre 9-to-5 job as a woman. And that comes more down to being just not just a woman, but a woman and a mom of three kids.
Yeah, you know, we talked before the show. That's a question I wouldn't wanted to ask because I wouldn't ask a man that question. But I'm actually glad you raised it because, you know, I know the hours you all work. Your city councils meet in the evening. If you got kids, that's a hell of a challenge, and especially if you're a single mom. So, you know, I think the Lehigh Valley is lucky to have you all doing what you do to bring the quality of your work to the city. I have a student from my class in the studio with me, and that's Natalie. And the class I teach at Lehigh University is in social entrepreneurship, and they're all upperclassmen and graduate students. And I'd be willing to bet that Natalie and certainly others in my class and other young people that might be listening would be interested in knowing how you got here. I mean, did you go to college to be economic development professionals? How does somebody, I mean, none of you are I think, barely 40 years old, so you're young.
I women. Think like everybody else. I mean, you go to college, you know, and you do what you go to school for what you think you want to do, and then as you enter the workforce, you start at a point and it evolves. And, you know, this isn't what it used to be where you started in a career and that's what you do for the rest of your life. I think that this may not be the last career that I have. I don't want to speak for the other women here, but there may be other opportunities, you know, in the next decade for each of us that are different from economic development.
I would say, Alan, my core interests are still here. My undergraduate degree is in elementary education because I wanted to help our children because I believe that our children are the most important thing in our community. And I had an opportunity to get a master's degree right out of school. And I thought about it and I thought, you know, I want to be able to leverage myself. I don't want just another degree in education. I want to be able to do other things. So my master's is in public administration, which is clearly a good master's degree to have in this field. But at the end of the day, I believe that what I'm doing is helping the children of my community.
So you came at it from the perspective of wanting to make a difference, not necessarily revitalizing a city, but at least not contributing to the problem, but actually contributing to the solution.
Correct. I joined. I actually worked for nonprofit. I have a concentration in nonprofit management because I wanted to save the world. And I was working in nonprofit and realized that no matter what I did up against the city administration that I was working against at that time, I couldn't really move the needle from the nonprofit side. And so I thought, if I can't beat them, I'm going to join them. I'm going inside. And so I ended up inside, and I found that the whole economic development project management was a skill that I didn't realize I had.
How'd you get here, Gretchen?
I had an interest in real estate and also an interest in finance. So a little bit more from the technical side, I think. The opportunity kind of fell into my lap with a pending recession and the creation of this position in Easton. Prior to me, there was no economic development director in the recent past. And what I found, similar to what Sarah said, is it was amazing how effective you can be from the inside and how rewarding those projects and affecting people in such a positive way. There's certainly a negative aspect to it too, because of all the criticism. You can't please everyone all the time, but the positive in my experiences has outweighed that, and being able to be part of an urban revitalization, a community revitalization, neighborhood housing revitalization, it's great.
You know, I don't take this as sucking up in any way, but I mean, I've been impressed over and over by all three of your intellectual capacity for understanding real estate development. I mean, you guys are up against big-time developers with lots of money that have done a lot of developments, and you got to be able to keep up with them. I mean, you're involved in deals, and I don't know how. I mean, were there courses that you took? Has this come naturally? How in the world do you keep up with that kind of firepower?
I say I learned it all from my family.
Is your family a real estate development?
Well, actually, a couple of members of my family are lawyers. And so I say it's like being at the kitchen table. You know, you have to be able to hold your own. Very strong personalities in the family. My mom is the school teacher, my dad a lawyer, and my older brother and my older sister are both attorneys. My sister's husband's an attorney. But even as a child.
That must be awful at Thanksgiving.
I was the smart one. but he's even as a child, you know, and in all sorts of collaborative efforts that you work in, not just, you know, some people you get it at home with the family, some people they get it in their volunteerism, some people get it when college, when you move in with your roommates, but you realize you have to stand up for your own, and you have to stand up for what you believe in, and it is difficult, Alan. I was in a meeting this morning with, you know, some people that are very well respected in the community and are very good at what they do, and we have to think about that community. You know, I can't make a decision based on as if I'm an owner of a company, because I have to make the decision based on the community. And as Gretchen said, you're not going to please everyone, but you have to do your best to please the majority and do what we believe is right.
I mean, in your case, you've got $500 million in development in the pipeline, some very, very impressive real estate development, guys that build buildings like overnight. And, you know, I don't think people understand that the city needs to be right there understanding the deals and push back often and to make them work to the best of, you know, for the benefit of the community. Gretchen, I mean, your real estate development expertise is amazing. I just wonder, you know, how long the Lehigh Valley gets to keep the three of you before you get picked off by any number of developers. And nobody could fault you for it, because none of you are making anywhere near what the developers are making that you're kind of doing business with.
Was there a question in there?
Now, see, in the art of interviewing, sometimes you make a point and expect the person that you're interviewing to respond to the point.
I agree with Sarah that, you have to keep the best interest in the community in mind. And you have to put developers in perspective. Everybody deserves the respect that we give to them. But we've heard the saying before, everybody puts their pants on the same way in the morning. You know, it's the key is to not become too enamored with people just because they have the money or the privilege or the opportunity to do development projects. If we remember that we're all in this together, and the ultimate goal is to create jobs and revitalize our communities. And for us, there's some component of defending the taxpayers too, depending on what the deal is, and making sure that what we do is sustainable and beneficial, not just to us, but to the generation that comes after us.
What do you have to do that you wish you didn't have to do? What part of your job
manage
do
people
you hate? Managing people, I hate that too. You know, all I want is for people to be perfect and to work their tails off. I don't know why that's too asking too much.
For me, I think it's compliance. I mean, it's hard enough to juggle the amount of grants and funding sources that we manage. Each one of them has a different set of rules and reports and people who are overseeing you at the state or federal level who turn over every 10 minutes. So they're constantly learning on their end, and sometimes you feel like you might be helping them. And so I feel like we spend a lot of time, and it's needed. I know that it's needed because there's got to be some level of oversight. But I find it time-consuming and sometimes difficult to take care of all those things and do what we need to do to progress our projects and sit down and strategize and look at things from a 30,000 square foot view.
What do you hate about your job, Sarah? Besides having to deal with me, I know. I can see your face. I understand what you're thinking.
Actually, Alan, a great point. I don't own my company. So sometimes the messages I'm delivering, people think are from me, and I'm delivering a message or doing something in negotiations with a developer that is because of someone else or because of the influence of the community. And me personally, I might not have cared, but my responsibility is to deliver the other message. And that's actually the most difficult part for me.
The flip side of the question: what is it that excites you about it? What makes it something that you're excited to get out of bed in the morning and race off to work to do?
I'll say, I know everybody talks about it, but even in Scranton, when I worked in the city of Scranton, it was so cool to walk down a street and have music playing in an art gallery and people buying coffee in a coffee shop with lofts above it in a building that a year previously was vacant, didn't have water service, had a lot of disgusting things inside it, and to see that vitality in the community and know how hard you work to make that happen, it's pretty cool.
Last time I was in Scranton, I was amazed at how far it had come along, even though it remains in distressed status, which is really pretty weird. Gretchen, is there something that excites you particularly about your job?
No, it's the same type of thing. I mean, the actual visible progress and gratification that comes from working so hard on something and then seeing it done, and also helping people, you know, whether it's a small business owner, whether it's someone that we helped with their house with a home loan. Think of a woman who speaks often about the few trees that were added through a Westward Neighborhood Partnership and an Elm Street grant, and just the absolute the impact that had on her life and her family's life.
Yeah.
We talk about these big projects all the time, but there are so many little things that are happening regularly that
sidewalk and
make your day, yeah. That make someone else's life. So there are those moments of gratification.
You listen to the WDIY. Tonight my guests are Gretchen Longenbach, Alicia Carner, and Sarah Hailstone, the Directors of Community and Economic Development, respectively, for Easton, Bethlehem, and Allentown. All right, let's just as we're about to wrap up, what are the biggest challenges that are facing you in sustaining this effort in the next few years?
I've seen regularly over the past few years the kind of the drying up of funding from the state and the federal governments. Easton relies on funding from the federal and the state government to do our projects and to do any projects that are anything other than, you know, general operation of the city. It doesn't have money in its own coffers that it can spend on that. So Mayor Panto reported on that this morning at his State of the City, that we use OPM, other people's money, for all of the economic development that really happens in the city. So as that continues to dry up, we'll have more and more challenges moving forward. Hopefully the market will improve, though, and you know, projects will need less and less subsidy. But that's certainly drying up, as well as the impact of the pension liability on the city. As we see that moving forward, I see that as a real risk to our budgets locally.
I was going to say, for Allentown, you know, it's so interesting what's happening. But keeping the growth going and growing the middle class in Allentown, you know, I see that as one of our challenges, because I think that there will be a lot of opportunity for people, and making sure that the middle class that America wants to be in the city of Allentown is important.
You know, what I worry about, Sarah, is that the success of the city reaching the working class neighborhoods is almost a scary thought, insofar as I worry that a lot of people, as soon as they think they can get enough for their house, they'll move out, because, you know, they're frustrated being urban residents, and, you know, the city services aren't what they used to be and all that kind of stuff, and that they get the price for the house that they find acceptable, they'll be heading out. That worries me.
It's kind of what I was saying, I think, in a similar way. Yeah, we want to keep, I guess I should say, we want to keep them,
right,
and grow it,
yeah.
Because they are the future of our community.
Yeah, I'm just afraid we're going to lose people when they think they can afford to get out. What are the challenges, Alicia?
Well, it's hard for me to see a lot of challenges. I've been on the job 60 or 70 days, and so all I see is opportunity.
What are you waiting for?
All I see is opportunity at this point. You know, I see an opportunity in the city with the Cariz and with the two downtowns and the industrial development along 412, and I look forward to the completion of the 412 construction and the rehab of the Fay Bridge and the Hill to Hill Bridge, and, you know, all the things that are critical to helping the city thrive from an infrastructure perspective. But you know, so all I see is, you know, again, tremendous opportunity for us to move forward very positively and do good things for the people of the city of Bethlehem.
So we're happy. You have been listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Next month, I've got Alicia Carner's boss, Mayor Bob Donchez, old friend, teacher to my kids, and all-around good guy. My guests tonight, Alicia Carner, City of Bethlehem, Gretchen Longenbach, City of Easton, Sarah Hailstone, City of Allentown, doing extraordinary work and making our cities work. Thanks to all three of you for joining us. And I couldn't help but end the show with this song. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
You're listening to WDIY Allentown. We're at 88.1 FM in Allentown, Bethlehem, 93.9 East in Phillipsburg, and 93.7 in Fogelsville and Trexlertown, and on the web at wdiy.org. Time is coming up to 8 o'clock.